Good morning. So very good to be here with you this morning. If you want to take your Bibles out and open them up to the book of Genesis, we'll be looking at this at Genesis in just a moment. We're going to begin our study today. As we begin what we're going to be talking about, just introduce what we're going to be talking about a little bit this morning. The idea of modesty. I think this is a subject that many might consider to be a bit of a touchy subject. But it's also a subject that preachers once a year kind of pull out around this time, weather starting to warm up. Let's talk about modesty. I woke up this morning and thought, this is the perfect day to talk about modesty because it's freezing. So I'm not going to be stepping on anybody's toes right now. But I realized as I was preparing for this lesson that I hadn't spoke about this here since I've been here almost 3 years. And I wanted to begin considering how we were going to approach the subject, and I felt like the best way to do that was maybe to take all of the maybe the preconceived thoughts that we might have, maybe everything that we've heard before, just to set that to aside for a moment and just ask ourselves a very simple question. And that's going to be kind of the focus of our study today, is answering this very simple question. And that is this: does the Bible give us a pattern? What are our thoughts on that? Does the Bible, or is there a biblical pattern for public modesty for both men and women in the Bible, regardless of culture, regardless of situation? So, male or female, publicly in view, I'm not here to tell you how to dress when you're at your house all by yourselves. Just we're here to consider, to ask the question, does the Bible give us some form of a pattern for when we are in view of other people, that there is a way that we should dress, no matter who we are and no matter what the society is and what the culture is that we live in? There's only three answers to this question. There is a yes. I believe that the Bible does, and if we are saying yes, we take that serious, and we hold this to be a firm statement. This is a heaven or hell statement, maybe. So we have a yes, God cares about what we wear, and He has instructed us on what we are, how we are to clothe our bodies. Maybe we are a no. I do not think the Bible goes into what it is I'm supposed to put on my body. I do not think God cares what I put on my body, and I don't think any of you have a right to tell me how I clothe myself. And then there's somewhere in the middle, a maybe. I think that God does care. I'm not sure the Bible is clear enough that we can create guidelines and draw principles. So this is the question. I'm going to leave it up for the remainder of the lesson. I want you to consider this. I want you to capture your answers right now, though. Where are you at? Don't raise your hands or nod your heads or try to give any indication where you're at. Just for yourself, where am I at in the answer of this question? Is there a biblical pattern? As you're doing that, I'm going to put a little mannequin up here on the board, and we're going to clothe them. This is not a male or a female. This is just human. Where would we, if we were going to say a biblical pattern, is there something in the Bible? What might we suggest? How might we cover this human? I'm going to give you my suggestion this morning. I'm just kidding. That's not my suggestion. That's the suggestion of all the fathers in here who have daughters. They say, this is what we're going to do. Now that we broke the ice a little bit, how about we give a little bit more closer to what I think the Bible is revealing? We have a picture of a human that is covered from their shoulders to about their knees. You don't have to agree with this picture. Maybe you're here today and you say, hey, I think I would make that box a little bit bigger, cover a little bit more. Maybe you're here today and you say, I think that box is a little bit too conservative. I think you could show a little bit more, cover a little bit less. Maybe you're here today and you're going, oh, great, another checkbox for me to check off. This is not about checking off a checkbox. This is about filling in a box. This is like Scantron. All my homeschool friends over here just went, I have no idea what he's talking about when I talk about Scantrons. But if you remember, we're just talking about covering up. What is it that we need to be covering? Does God care about what we cover? We're going to consider this morning by beginning in Genesis. Going back to the beginning, we're going to look at... Oh, let me say this before I go on. I forgot about this. if we're going to say cover it up, we cover it up. There's a concept, it was a lot more popular in the 90s when I was growing up, that we put clothes on that are filled with holes that you can see right through them. It's not quite, you don't see anybody walking around with fishnet stockings as often as you used to. I think that's a good thing. But we do have this concept that's very popular today, that the clothes we put on, it's going to cover it, but it's going to be so tight that it might as well not be covered. If we're going to agree that the Bible maybe has some principles we're going to talk about and look at it, if we think that it needs to be covered, my suggestion is, well, let's cover it. Let's make sure that it's actually covered. So having said that, we're going to go to Genesis. And that's where we're going to begin our study this morning. In a passage that is very simple and very straightforward, and I think it makes up a fantastic foundation for what we're going to be looking at. That's Genesis chapter 3 and the fall of man. So just to remind you how we got here, God has created mankind. He's put them in the garden. Adam and Eve are there. They're naked. They're unashamed. God says, here's all the things that you can eat from. And they have all the trees, all the green things that are in the garden. But he says the trees in the midst of the garden, in the very middle of the garden, specifically a tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you are not to eat. And we know the story. Satan comes along and tempts them to see that this will make them wise and make them like God. And Eve eats of the tree and she gives to Adam, who is with her, and he eats. And they immediately realize that they are naked. Now we fast forward just a little bit to near the end of this passage, and we get to verse 21. Genesis chapter 3, verse 21. The Lord God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife and clothed them. I want to talk for a minute about what this passage is saying. God looked down on mankind in their nakedness and said they need to be covered. Garments, and the Hebrew word here, and you can only go so far with this, I understand. This Hebrew word is not going to give us this box that we have beside us here, but the Hebrew words do give us a little bit of an idea of what's happening. So God said, when Moses records this, Moses is writing this part of the books of Moses, he says, God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife. That garment is the Hebrew word keteneth, and it means tunic or undergarment. And we're going to consider in a little bit about what that would have looked like, but we see that God made clothing. He made something that was going to reside upon the bodies of Adam and Eve and cover them. Specifically, it goes on to say, he clothed them. And the Hebrew word there doesn't just mean put clothes on, but to fully clothe. God looked at Adam and Eve and said, you need to be fully clothed. Now, there's something I think it's important for us to understand right now, and that is that in the eyes of many today, Adam and Eve are clothed at this point. So if you recall, they eat the tree of knowledge of good and evil, their eyes are opened, and they realize immediately we are naked, they become ashamed by that. And in verse 7, it says that they made for themselves loin coverings. So Adam and Eve are garden, they're naked, and now they've made loin coverings. This word here, the Hebrew word, it's very similar. In fact, sometimes it's just used to mean girdle or belt. They made something that's going to cover down here. They're going to cover their lower part of their body in some way with fig leaves. God looks at them and says, you are not fully clothed. This is not fully clothed in the eyes of God. There's something that's important for us to understand. Man might say, I've got clothes on. I think I'm fully covered. The reason we start this topic off, the reason why we start studying this in Genesis chapter 3, is because it reveals to us that we don't have the authority in this realm to be the deciders of what is clothed and what is not clothed. Mankind had garments on, not garments, they had loin coverings on, and God said, I'm going to give you garments, I'm going to create a tunic for you, because you need to be fully clothed. Now, I do want to say before we go on, that if we need to be honest, like Adam and Eve were in this, it's very easy for us to get defensive and to get upset whenever we start talking about this subject, whether we are male or female. It's very easy for us to say, you know, listen, I'm fine the way I am. That's not what Adam said. After verse 7, Adam and Eve have made these coverings of fig leaf. God comes to the garden and they hide. And do you remember why they hid? Verse 10, they said, because we are naked. They have a covering on. And yet, something about what their body was revealing, they looked and saw God in his presence in the garden, and they said, we are still naked. And thus, God has this communication with them in which he finally says, I want to fully clothe you. We start here because God is revealing to us, I have authority. If we are going to be honest and open before God, respecting his authority, we must recognize that anything short of covering what God has said needs to be fully covered is naked. It's the way that God reveals it in this first place that we're going to look. Now, I'm going to ask you to turn your Bibles over to Exodus chapter 28 as we continue. We're going to see some more information on this under the Mosaic Law, but while you're doing that, I want you to consider you're not just turning 100 pages or so. You're not just turning over several chapters into a new book. You're moving through history, some 2,500 years. We are in a completely different time, and not only that, we are in a new culture. I'm not sure that you can call Adam and Eve just by themselves a culture, a society, but maybe now we are in a society or in a culture, but at the very least, everything is different. Nothing is the same as it was in the garden. It would be so easy to look back on those days and say, well, we don't live in those days. Everything is different now. With that thought, I want you to consider what we learn about God's desire. Here in Exodus 28, we're going to start reading verse 40. For Aaron's sons, you shall make tunics. You shall also make sashes for them. You shall make caps for them for glory and for beauty. You shall put them on Aaron, your brother, and on his sons with him, and you shall anoint them and ordain them and consecrate them, and they may serve me, that they may serve me as priests. You shall make for them linen breeches to cover their bare flesh. They shall reach from the loins even to the thighs. They shall be on Aaron and on his sons when they enter the tent of meeting or when they approach the altar to minister in the holy place, so that they do not incur guilt and die. It shall be a statute forever to him and to his descendants after him. God says, at the very beginning of this, I'm going to tell you what the priests are going to be wearing, Moses. And the first thing he says is, priests got to wear tunics. Now, that word, it's not the same as that we saw in Genesis. Genesis, God made garments. But in Hebrew, it's the exact same word, keteneth. The same word that God said to Adam and Eve, I am making for you garments, keteneth. He says, I am creating tunics for you. He does the same thing here to Moses. In the times of, what have I done? That's a new button. Okay. In the times of Moses, we know a little bit. Again, Hebrew only goes so far. Tell us what it was. We know a little bit about what these attire would have looked like, though. A tunic. Remember, this is when we say undergarment. We shouldn't think necessarily underwear like we think about it today. But this was the garment that would have been worn closest to the skin. There may have been other garments that were given with this, but primarily, this would have been the garment that was worn closest to the skin. And what we have discovered as we look back, and you can dig into lexicons, and you can dig into encyclopedias, and we're finding the same description over and over again because it's what we've found in history, is that these were garments that would have covered the shoulders, or at least they would have hung from the shoulders. Sometimes it would have been one solid piece with a hole in the middle, kind of like you think of a poncho, something that would have draped over the body and then been pulled tight around. Other times it was kind of more akin to what we just might call a long shirt. A long shirt. It would have hung over the shoulders, falling down over the body, generally going to the knees, sometimes, although rarely, going to the ankles. I think there's this concept sometimes that when we think about modesty and we think about tunics, that it's got to go to the ankles. That wasn't always the case. Generally, though, it would have come somewhere around the knees. And it would have covered at least one of the shoulders. There was also tunics that would have went over just one shoulder and draped across the body. But those tunics would have always been accompanied by another form of dress that would have went over the other shoulder going the opposite direction. This is just what we've discovered from history. That doesn't give us our guidelines, but it paints a picture of what God's saying. When God says, priests, you're going to be covered in tunics. You're going to put a tunic on. And then he goes a step further in verse 42, and he says, priests, you got to wear breeches. You have to put breeches on, and these breeches are going to cover the bare skin of your loin and your thighs. And in doing so, God engulfed a debate for centuries after to ask this question, at least in America, what is the thigh? Because, and I want to say this right now, if we approach modesty with this attitude of what is the thigh? Because I want to cover up, but I want to show off as much as I can too. I want to suggest that we're approaching it with the wrong attitude. If we approach modesty with the sense of what does God want covered, because God has said he wants it covered and I want to cover that, I'm not saying I'd rather be safe than sorry. I don't think that's always a great mental mindset. I want to be safe than sorry, and so I'm going to create these laws and these fences that I'm going to bind on other people. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if God has said it, he wants it covered, I want to have it covered. That's the way that I hope that we approach these topics. So when he says, cover the loins, cover the thighs, what is he talking about? Well, we know what he's talking about when he talks about the loins. We've already seen that. Adam and Eve covered their loins. That was the idea of a belt. We might just think of it as a women's swimwear bottom. That's more or less what we see covering. Something very small that would cover the region around your waist. The thighs. The Bible talks about a thigh that is up here by the hip. Jacob was touched in the thigh and his hip came out of socket. So somebody would say, well, the thigh is this upper region of your leg. The Bible also talks about a thigh that is lower down. So is God talking about the upper thigh or the lower thigh? I would make the suggestion, when God says thigh, he just means the thigh. How do we determine what that is? Well, one good place, there's a lot of good arguments that people can make, and I've heard fantastic ones, but I think one of my favorites, just to go to the book of Judges, Judges chapter 3, and there you will find the story of Ehud, who kills King Eglon. Ehud is our left-handed hero, and he is going to go in and kill this oppressive king, and he does that by binding to his thigh a sword or a dagger, which will be covered by his garment. His garment is going to go down far enough to cover this dagger, which is bound to his thigh. And what's fantastic about this passage is it tells us a little bit about the dagger. It says that it is of two edges. It is a double-edged sword that is a cubit in length. What's a cubit? Well, it's subjective. That's what a cubit is. A cubit would change a little bit, but by and large, a cubit was the measurement of an Israelite male's arm from his elbow to his knuckles, his first knuckles of a clenched fist. Embarrassing story. I'm sorry, Holly. Embarrassing story. That's also the distance to which I would ask Miss Holly to buy my pants in high school, the leg opening, this part down here, my JNCO jeans, for those of you who remember JNCO jeans and how silly that looked. I wanted pants that were this wide so they would cover my shoe completely. I don't suggest that we bring that fashion back. A cubit. If you can think of, this is roughly about 18 inches. That's what most estimates are. A cubit was about 18 inches. If you take your elbow to your knuckle and you put that on your hip bone, we can all find our hip bone. We put that on our hip bone and go down. You know what you're looking at? You're probably looking at your thigh. And that's the area to which Ehud was able to fasten a dagger, and his garments, his tunic or his cloak that it talks about in that passage, went down far enough to cover that area. God says, priests, you're going to wear tunic, and over top of that, you're going to put on a pair of breeches, and they're going to cover your loins, and they're going to cover your thighs. And you know what? If it doesn't, it's not really that big a deal. Verse 43 says, no, this is serious to me. He says, you are to do this because I don't want you to incur guilt and die. God took this idea of covering the body very seriously, so seriously that he actually said, I'm even thinking about things that you're not thinking about. Turn back to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20, I would say there was nobody in attendance that was considering what God is going to say here in verses 25 and 26. If you make an altar of stone for me, you shall not build it of cut stones, for if you wield your tool on it, it will profane it. And you shall not go up by steps to my altar so that your nakedness will not be exposed on it. What God is saying is there are circumstances that might compromise the covering that I have given for priests. You may get up in the morning, priest, and you know what? I'm all covered up here and I'm all covered down here. But as I get to moving and working and I get to going around my business, I'm standing up, I'm sitting down, I'm going up the steps, all of a sudden things that ought to be covered aren't covered anymore. God says, I'm thinking about that. That's how serious I take this. Even when there is a situation that might compromise that, that needs to be on your mind. We might apply that today to thinking about the position that people might be around us. The way that we are sitting, the way that our clothes fall on our body, is it, if it's modest while we are standing, is it also still modest in other situations as well? God took this seriously. Now, maybe you've been sitting here and you've been listening. You say, well, that's fine and good. These are all good things to consider. But you know what? That was a long, long, long time ago. And that was specifically spoken to priests. Like God is saying that this is what the priests do in the temple. He didn't say all of Israel has to dress this way. Well, we started with that. You may not remember that. We had a fantastic series of lessons by Eric, and they have put so much information out there that I barely have room for anything else right now, as I'm still going through and considering all the things that he said. But the week before his lesson, we mentioned this, that we are priests. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 9 through 10, we might, don't even need to turn there to remember what it says, that we are a royal priesthood who have the responsibility of declaring his excellencies. We are priests in God's kingdom today. And you might say, well, okay, we're priests, but that's how we dress when we go to the temple. If someone came today and said, well, show me, take me to the temple, maybe we'd say, well, okay, we're going to bring them to church. Come to church service and we come here. Look, this is how we're going to dress. We're going to dress in a modest sort of way. But then we go back to our lives. We go to the world. We go to Walmart. Sometimes we go to places. Something that might even help this is recognize sometimes we just go to places we don't have any business going. We say, well, we dress like that because everybody else dresses like that. Well, maybe we ought not be there. Or maybe at the very least, we should consider the example that we might make of those who are supposed to proclaim his excellencies in our attire. But you might say, well, show me where the temple is. Well, that's the other thing that we need to consider. Ephesians chapter 2, verses 19 through 22. We are studying Ephesians. We talked about how we are the temple. We are being built up into a dwelling place of God. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, likewise, talks about how we are that temple. Over and over again, what we have recognized as we look through the New Testament is that not only are we the priests, but our lives, Romans chapter 12, are meant to be sacrifices, and we make those sacrifices not when we come here together on the first day of the week, but every day. Because the temple of God dwells within us. And if I'm going to go out into the world and say, look, I'm the temple and you can be the temple too, God can dwell within you, we need to be dressed for the part. Now, we're going to talk in a minute about how that goes beyond just what we put on our body, but I hope that we see that we need to take seriously the things that are spoken of here when God spoke to the priests and said, look, I care about how you're dressed. The very least, that should tell us something about what we as priests today need to consider when it comes to God. Now, maybe you're also sitting here and you're going, no, I didn't think that. I think this is great and I want more. You just bring more and more out. Let's really start digging this box into making it the shape that we want. I'm here to tell you I can't. This is pretty much it. Repeated, yes. We'll see. There's other examples of it, but this is pretty much it. We have seen two main points, really maybe three, that are going to be repeated again and again, but they're really just these same points over and over again. Number one, God has authority. Man doesn't get to say, this is the dress, this is the attire that God will be pleased with, this is what covers the body. God has authority. And when God covered mankind, Adam and Eve, He covered them with a tunic, something that would have hung from the shoulders and went somewhere near the knees, rarely to the ankles. And when He covered His priests, He said very similarly, wear a tunic and pay special attention to covering the loins and the thighs and making sure that in all circumstances, that doesn't change. Why? Because anything other than that is nakedness. Exodus chapter 20, they might look and see nakedness. It's something that is supposed to be covered that is not covered. God calls it nakedness. That's our pattern. And if we want more than that, I'm sorry, there's not much more that I can find. But when we jump to the New Testament, we do get some information that helps us to dissect. Wow, that word just came in my head and went out just as fast before I could decipher. That's what I was trying to think of. Help us decipher all this information. We get some information. And so I want to look at one more passage, and I think it'd be foolish not to, in a sermon about modesty, consider 1 Timothy chapter 2. That's what we're going to look at here in just a second. I also want to say that I know that in Jonathan's class, you are studying 1 Timothy. And so if he's already studied this or is about to study this or is putting this off to the very end and I'm about to mess it all up, either way, I apologize to Jonathan. So 1 Timothy chapter 2, and we're going to read in verse 9 through 10, but the first thing I want to say before we read that is understand that this is universal language. And I say, whoa, I'll pump your brakes, Kyle. This says women. That's not universal. That is not all-inclusive. You're right, it's not. But we need to understand what he's saying there is still applicable to men as well. Just before this, he says, men, I want you to be praying. Men, I want you to lift up holy hands. I want you to put forth holiness into the world. Men, do you think that God has no desire for women to pray and for women to put forth an attitude and a character of holiness? Of course not. We would recognize that is something that God desires of both men and women. He calls on men to lead in this and to set the example for that. And there's ways that men are going to do that, which we know God's word doesn't allow for women. But we understand that there's a universal aspect of that. Likewise, in these passages, we're going to talk about women. But please understand that that is applicable to men as well. We should consider the character of what is being described and overlay that in our life as well. So 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as is proper for women making a claim to godliness. Now, first thing I want to cover as we get into this is this question that comes up oftentimes when we study this passage. If I know somebody, or maybe I like myself to braid my hair and to put on nice jewelry and my clothes, I like good clothes. Is this passage saying that if I wear those things or if I do those things, I am in sin? We need to understand some of the language that he uses here. Specifically, key in when he says that it is to that they are to dress or to adorn themselves not with yada yada yada, but rather. The language that he uses there is a idiom that is very common in the Hebrew language called the not but construction. And the focus of it was not to take a subject and say, okay, these things, they're all wrong. They're all sinful. Throw them all out. You can only do this thing. But instead, to argue from the lesser that something is greater. So when he talks about braided hair and earrings and costly garments, it's not that he's saying those things are just downright sinful. He's saying they are less than good works. Our appeal should be for the good works. Our desire should be to clothe in those things. Not that if we are clothed in something, if we have our hair braided, that it's impossible for us to do good works. But rather, that should be what we strive to clothe ourselves in over top of these other things. So please understand that as we go in. Now, for the remainder of the lesson, we're just going to look at some of the words he uses. And they're all very simple words. They're not hard to understand. I don't think it's going to be all that groundbreaking. But what I hope it does for us is shows that the Old Testament, God said, look, here's how I want you dressed. You're gonna put this sort of garment on. It was a very ones and zeros. And now he's taking that and saying, look, your garments are an extension of your heart, an extension of your attitude. And I want us to see that in the language here, that it's not just God going, okay, I'm going to tell you what is and isn't acceptable. I'm going to tell you how your heart should be behind this. So he says, number one, dress or adorn yourself in proper clothing. That word proper. Number one, the thing you learn from this is if there's proper clothing, there is improper clothing. There's the opposite of that. Proper clothing, that word in Greek, means well-arranged or of good behavior. If you go over to 1 Timothy chapter 3 and he starts talking about elders, the same word is used. It's translated proper here. It's translated respectful there. Respectful clothing. It's the idea that I want to put forth, I want to clothe myself in something that doesn't show a spirit or heart of rebellion. It's okay. You think this isn't acceptable? Well, here, I'll show you. I'll wear what I want to wear. That's not what proper clothing would be. And granted, we understand there is no more breeches, by the way. When we get to the New Testament, the idea of breeches kind of goes out the window. God doesn't use that language anymore. But here he does tell us clothing, and that doesn't give us this box here. But what it does give us, the Greek word for that, means to let down over or to fall down over. It is very similar in concept to keteneth, to the word for tunic. For garment, God is saying there is a clothing that is to fall over the body. That's not trying to say any certain type of clothing, just something that covers, that looks proper, that looks of a good behavior, of well-respectfulness or well-arranged. We might also consider, not in the concept of this lesson, we might also consider the idea of reverence with our clothing, coming from the idea of proper clothing as well. The next one we're going to look at is modestly. We are to be adorning ourselves with modesty. And the breakdown of that word is very easily, we see this and go, that doesn't exist in our culture today. The idea of a sense of shame, bashfulness, or respect for others. Take those descriptions, try to apply them over the world today, you're going to have a hard time finding people to meet that character. You go and just leave from here, go into your places of work and start telling your coworkers that the preacher got up and said, I should be ashamed of the way I'm dressing, and watch them just scoff with horror. How dare he? In fact, how dare anybody? How dare anybody ever say that I should be ashamed? We don't have the right to do that. Well, God says that our attire should show that we do have a sense of shame or bashfulness, this idea of a innocence that says, I recognize there are things that should be hidden, that should be covered, things that God has prepared for marriage that needs to be residing only within the husband-wife relationship, and it embarrasses me to think that might be revealed to someone other than my spouse. This idea of shame and embarrassment. There should be a sense when we consider that God has chosen this needs to be hidden, that when we willingly reveal it, that should provoke shame within us, the same way that it did with Adam and Eve as well. Another word that he uses here that we need to consider is discreetly. I think in the past, I don't know, maybe you have as well, but I've heard this concept, and I understand the reason why. To dress discreetly is to minimize self. Kind of like use discretion. You gotta hide yourself. And boy, that really goes in the face of our culture today when your identity is what you need to put out in front, and that's the most important thing. And while there's good arguments for why that is a noble character, and we see that in John the Baptist, said less of self and more of the I must decrease so that he can increase. We understand that concept. It's not really what discreetly means in this passage. The word is used to describe self-control or also self-restraint. And I think that's a big one for us to consider, especially when we consider the topic that is oftentimes very sensitive in nature to the desires and wishes of others. Maybe you're here today and you say, I don't want to dress like that. I don't want to dress like that in any way whatsoever. I want you to consider for a second before we go on the way that we evangelize to the world. We go to the world and we tell them, look, we want you to learn more about Jesus Christ. We want to share with you what he has done. And along the way, we're going to find things that you're going to have to sacrifice. Sins that are going to have to be laid at his feet, and we're not going to walk in these paths anymore. Maybe it's drunkenness, maybe it's drugs or it's lustfulness and pornography. Whatever it is, we have to lay that, and we say it to the world, and what do we expect to hear from them? We expect to hear, Jesus is worth it. I'm going to quit it tomorrow. I don't want to have anything to do with that. It's gone. Like Abraham, I'm going to drop it off in the morning, and I'm following God from here on out. But then we get a group of Christians together and we say something like, the dress that you're wearing or the shirt that you're not wearing, men, whatever it is, this is not modest. And what do we hear in return? Well, you don't have right to tell me that. You're just being, you're just taking too many liberties with the text. You're being overly conservative. Maybe so. But in the passage, Paul says to Timothy, teach people to dress discreetly. Maybe this isn't the way that you would choose to dress. He says, show some restraint. Self-restraint in the way that we clothe the body. And the last one I want us to consider is one that we've kind of already made, but we're going to just come back to. And that is, dress as people who are making a claim for godliness. We are just vessels. We sing that song sometimes. And we know what kind of vessels we are. We are vessels of clay, of earthenware. But residing within us is the message of Jesus Christ. As priests of the temple in which God resides and dwells within us, dress as a people who are making a claim that God is good. Dress as a people who are making a claim that God is righteous and that He is worthy of molding our lives to. It's very easy to do, by the way. Our society, Satan has done us a favor. Satan has done us a favor in making the society so lost in their desires for individual right, emphasizing sexual pleasure. Over and over again, we see in our society the great desire to show more off. You want to make a claim to godliness, cover up. And in just that simple choice, you become weird. I'm sorry to tell you that, but not really. Because God says, that's what I'm making. I'm making peculiar people. People that the world will look at and say, why are they different? He says, and it's in that He works. It's in that He reveals His glory. Not that the glory of Kyle or anybody else shines into the world. Not that the glory of my body that people could look at and say, look at that, by the way, there's not much glory for Kyle's body there. But the glory that you might say, oh, I want to show this off. He says, when we are a peculiar people, people aren't looking at that and saying, look at him, look at her. They're saying, there's something different about them. It's our opportunity to say that thing different about me is God, and His glory greatly surpasses anything that I could show to the world. We are priests, and our attire reveals our attitude towards God. We are priests, and our attire reveals our attitude towards the care of others. That's what I hope we take from 1 Timothy chapter 2. And so let's bring our question back up again as we close all this out. Is there a biblical pattern for public, not in your home, but public? I will say that this includes when we leave the home, but it also includes when we present our bodies in maybe electronic form, social media. We're putting that out for public viewership. So, is there a biblical pattern for public modesty for both men and women in the Bible, regardless of culture or situation? As I said, there's three answers. And if you're here today, you're going to answer one of those answers. Maybe you're here today and you say yes. Yes, there is a pattern. We have seen it. We have looked at it. And I understand how you have come to this conclusion. And I'm not saying that I don't agree with you. What I'm asking you this morning is to ask yourself this question. If I am in the yes category, if I think this is a heaven or hell situation, souls are being lost to hell because of the way that they are revealing the skin and not covering themselves up, what do I do when I see that? You know what some people do? They come to me and say, preach a sermon on modesty, Kyle. It's about time to preach a sermon on modesty. If that's what you do, that's perfectly okay. I hope everybody here knows that when I get up here to preach, the only thing I'm throwing out at you is information. I can't hurt you with that. I'm not going to, it might step on toes, but it's not going to be an attack on anybody. I just want to put information out there. And so if you say, you know, I see this, I see somebody that's not dressed the way they are. Maybe I see someone who is revealing too much, and I know it's not in the scope of our lesson, but maybe I see someone who's dressing irreverent, and they're drawing attention to themselves instead of drawing attention to God. Kyle, preach a sermon on that. Okay. But could I suggest that you go read Titus chapter 2 and then read it again and then read it again? And I'm not going to say that if you're in this group, this yes group, that you're old, but you're probably more mature, probably have seen and experienced a lot of things, and you've probably seen the wisdom in this pattern. When you go to Titus chapter 2, what you're going to find is older women teach the younger women. And older men teach the younger men. And so maybe you see that young lady that is showing a little bit more off. Or you see the guy that's at the beach, no shirt on. Or he's up here at the Lord's Supper table and he's got his graphic t-shirt on. And it's just running all through you because you say, this is immodest. Take him out for lunch. Get to know him. Speak with them with love and compassion as a parent would, to try and train and nourish them, admonish them in the ways of the Lord. I'm not saying that that's going to make them just go, I believe everything you say, but it's going to go a lot further in helping build a relationship to where you can share with them something that should bring shame and likely will in a way that is gentle and loving and respectful. Maybe you're not a yes, maybe you're a maybe. So, yeah, look, we saw a lot of information in there, but I'm just not sure that you can put a box like that up on the PowerPoint, Kyle. Maybe so. But I'd have you go to that's supposed to say 1 Corinthians, not 2 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians, read chapters 8 through 10. You get a little more reading than just Titus 2. 1 Corinthians 8 through 10 talks about things that were sacrificed to idols. Talk specifically about meat and a problem that was going on. It's very similar to Romans chapter 14 and this idea of having concern for our brethren and for their consciences. And I want you to notice a few things in these passages. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, we need to consider that what he's saying there. But before that, just flip back. I didn't put this one up there, but flip back to 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Look at verse 13. If food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again so that I will not cause my brother to stumble. I really want him to be here, but his daughter is sick. But that's a hard passage for Jason Bridgman, who eats a lot of meat. I'm confident, though, that he would make the same decision. If something offends my brother, maybe I'm a maybe. Maybe I'm sitting here going, I don't think people have a right to put that box up. I know that God cares about what I wear, but I just think the guidelines are a little bit looser than that. Or maybe I think there is a thing, but I don't think it's as what you have here. 1 Corinthians reveals a character that says, look, that may be the case for me, but I care more about you than I care about myself. Look at chapter 10, verses 31 through 33. Listen to what he says here. Whether then you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense either to Jew or to Greek or to the church of God, just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, so that they may be saved. The salvation of my brethren, salvation of other people, is of great concern to the Christian. And so if you're a maybe, I would just ask you to read those passages and consider that. That there are those that maybe do see this a lot more strict than you. And while they don't have a right to build a fence over top of you, we have a responsibility to them in our consideration and our love for them as well. And then lastly, maybe you are a no. Personally, I don't think there's anybody in this audience that's a no. But if maybe you are. You are a no. I don't think God cares what I put on my body. And I don't think you have a right to get up and preach a sermon on it and to put people with boxes on them. And I don't think the elders have a right to come and to speak to me about any of this. And I would just simply ask you to read Hebrews chapter 4. And I'm not going to say that you're wrong. I'm just going to ask you to read Hebrews chapter 4, which in verse 12 talks about the Word of God being a two-edged sword that cuts and digs deep and divides soul and spirit, joint and marrow. It cuts within us. And if you would do that, if we would honestly take God's Word and just apply it into our hearts and let it cut and dig in there, I want to suggest that what you will find, at the very least, is over and over again God's plea to His people to love one another. That includes looking at those that may see something as sinful that you do not and giving them preference over yourself. The very mindset of Christ, who in Philippians chapter 2 we are called to mimic, to follow. But I would also suggest that as you did that, you would likely begin to see, as we've looked at this morning, that God does care about what we put on our body. But I don't want to end with that. And that's why we didn't begin with that. We began with Mark chapter 7, and I thank Elijah for reading that passage for us. Mark chapter 7 reveals that God cares, even though there is a pattern that I believe firmly is seen in Scripture that should dictate and convince us on the things that we cover or the things that we leave uncovered. And that pattern goes not only to show that God cares, but what other people think about should at least bear some weight in our minds. But another pattern that we see over and over again is that God is not trying to fix the outside. He's trying to fix the inside. Mark chapter 7 reveals that. It's this concept that it's not an outside-in religion. It's not, we clean the outside of the cup and eventually the inside of the cup. There's somebody that's not dressing modestly. We preach a sermon on modesty and eventually they're going to have a modest heart. Mark chapter 7, Jesus' words say that all of this begins within. Evil thoughts begin within. There is no, and there is power. Maybe this is another subject at some point. There is power within our bodies. Men and women, you have power over others with your body, and you get to choose how you're going to use that power in ways that might glorify God or ways that might draw attention to yourself. But there is no point at which any of us can say that they are responsible for my sinful thoughts, my sinful actions. It begins in my heart. And what comes from my heart reveals what is defiling me. So We need to begin with that. God is much more concerned about what you clothe your heart with than what you clothe your body with. I'm confident that as we read in Hebrews chapter 4, reflect upon His Word, we will see not only that, but we will see how our bodies are going to follow a heart that is being molded by Christ. If you are here today, number one, I'm not asking anybody to come up and repent today. If there's somebody here that recognizes, you know what, my attire hasn't been what it should have been, I'm not asking you to come up and make that known in front of the congregation. I'm asking you just to consider the pattern that God has and consider the opportunities we have to glorify God even in our dress. But if there are those here today who have never clothed their heart with God, I am asking you to consider what your life is today. Our heart can be wrapped up in the powerful, forgiving grace of God. We are promised that. Paul speaks about that in Galatians chapter 3. In fact, I think that's Galatians chapter 3, verse 27. He says before this, that you are a part of the family of God. What does that make us? That makes us priests. He's not just saving us. He's giving us a job. He's bringing us into His family to do the family business of helping draw glory to the Father and draw other people to Him. He says, you are a part of the family of God by faith. And when you are baptized into Christ, you are clothed with Christ. Like a garment. Kedeneth. We are in shame in our nakedness, our sin. And God sees us, and He sees the ways that we're trying to cover it, and it's not much better than a belt that tries to hide all of our nakedness. And He says, I want you to be fully clothed. I want you to put on Christ. If you are here today and you have never put Christ on in baptism, I would encourage you not to wait any longer. Let's talk about that right now. Come forward as we stand and as we sing.